Hello and welcome to the Swim Ireland podcast coaching series, getting to the nitty-gritty of what it takes to coach the finest aquatic stars in Ireland in an Olympic and Paralympic year. I'm your host, Joanne Murphy, and today I'll be talking to Stephen Beckerleg. Stephen is the National Centre Dublin Senior Assistant Coach, working with National Senior Team Head Coach Ben Higson. Stephen works with many of Ireland's top swimmers, including Shane Ryan and Dara Green, who have already met the qualification time for Tokyo, as well as leading Swim Ireland's F4 to 24 programme, aiming to qualify a female relay for the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Stephen, we're going to get straight into it, and I'm going to ask you very firstly to give us a little bit of a background to your involvement in the sport and your journey to coach to some of Ireland's top swimmers.
Yeah, of course. So I'll kind of begin where it all started, really. I learned to swim at the age of five, joining Plymouth Leander at that time, which John Rudd was the head coach. Obviously, he's now the MPD, but he was the head coach of Plymouth Leander at the time. And I suppose my swimming career really kicked off, I suppose, if you want to call it a swimming career, in 2004, at the age of 14, where I won multiple national titles on the 200, 400, 800 and 1500 freestyle. And from then on, I was picked for kind of a multiple British training camps, most noticeably making the Commonwealth Games in 2010. I narrowly missed out on the Olympics in 2012 and then kind of decided to retire. It was kind of a bitter pill to swallow at the time, kind of fell out of love with the sport. And it was kind of my own doing in a way. I had various different injuries throughout my career as well, which didn't help. So I didn't start kind of my coaching journey and my coaching career until about 2 years after that in 2014. I kind of rocked up to Plymouth Leander where they train and wanted to see all the guys that I used to train with, see John, because I hadn't seen them for a while. And John offered me a part-time coaching role just while I was, you know, doing other jobs at the same time, trying to get by. And, you know, I thought, well, I can't pass up the opportunity to come back because I was missing it at the time. So kind of made my way back, coaching alongside John and Robin Armeyan, who's now the head coach of Plymouth Leander, coaching the likes of, you know, Ruter and Ben and Anthony James, alongside those two coaches as well. And then in 2017, decided to apply for the job at National Centre Dublin and follow John on his way to Ireland.
Can I go back to your time stepping back from being a competitive athlete?
Of course, yeah.
You say it was a bitter pill to swallow. Was it difficult to step back?
It wasn't difficult to step back at the time because I fell out of love with the sport. But I suppose what was difficult to take is spending kind of all of my childhood, all of my teenage years training for what I ultimately wanted to do was make the Olympics, and then, you know, who knows what you do there. And to narrowly miss out by the smallest of margins kind of kicked me when I was down almost, or at least I thought it kicked me when I was down. Like I said, having multiple injuries, I had a hernia that I had on a British training camp, and I broke my wrist on a British training camp as well. And the kind of the wrist break, I was out for up to a year to a year and a half because I had my rib taken out to rebuild my wrist at the time. So I suppose in the back of my head, it was almost...
Sorry, did you just say you had your rib taken out to rebuild your wrist at the time?
I did, yeah. Only about 3 inches of my rib. And apparently it grows back into cartilage anyway. That was kind of put into my wrist to rebuild it, which is why I was out for so long, because the bone graft at the time took 16 weeks to heal. So I was in a cast for absolutely ages. And obviously it's not just trying to get back into physical shape, it's also that mental shape as well. And at the time I was young, I was naive, and I thought, I'm trying to play catch up here. So no matter what, you stand up behind the blocks, even if you've done the best work you've ever done, you've been the fastest you've ever been, you still have in the back of your mind that you're not good enough because everyone else has got a year and a half on top of you, you know?
So you will be well placed to be supporting our Olympic athletes that are, you know, a year on from not having the Olympics last year and dealing with some of that stress and that pressure and that initial disappointment at not getting to Tokyo last year, but hopefully getting there this year. And I'm sure that adds to your ability as a coach in supporting those athletes.
I certainly hope so. I think one of my kind of my best traits is the fact that I'm quite empathetic, and I do tend to care about not just the athlete, but the person. I want to make sure that their journey in the sport is a good one and a fun one. And when the time comes that they decide to hang up their trunks, they actually look back fondly on the sport and the time they had in National Centre Dublin, rather than looking back and wishing they, you know, hadn't joined at all.
Before we move into kind of the bulk of the questions that I have for you, will you explain to me what is F4 to 24, that program?
So F20 or F4 24 is essentially trying to, what Swim Ireland are trying to do and what we as coaches, not just at National Centre Dublin, but around the nation are trying to do is qualify a 4x200 freestyle women's relay. Like with all the relays, it's kind of, it's never been done before. So it's something new. It's something really exciting. And we're trying to create depth in not just in the 4x200 freestyle, but in every single event. And we thought that this was a great project and a great way to try and create that depth and that excitement towards the 200 metres freestyle.
Very exciting.
Yeah, very.
Especially for younger athletes kind of coming through this, it might be another pathway to the Olympics for them that, you know, they may not make it themselves directly, but through a relay, they may make it to the Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think when you make the Olympics, whether you're an individual team member or a relay team member, you're a member of the Irish Olympic team, you know, and I think no one can ever take that away from you. And the more people we can get there, the more relays and the bigger team and the bigger sense of national pride that we can make, then all the better, really.
Absolutely. Very exciting as well for the female swimmers that are coming through, even on the high performance unit now.
You know, that there'll be athletes out there that potentially think, oh, you know, I might not make the FINA A time. However, if we have four or five really good females that, you know, can kind of create that team, then all of a sudden you are an Olympian.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, amazing. Can I ask you a little bit about your role as the National Centre Dublin Senior Assistant? This was your first full-time coaching job. So how did you find the transition from coaching part-time to coaching as a profession?
I suppose I was a little naive at first as to what coaching at a national centre entailed, because obviously coming from a programme such as Plymouth Leander, it's, you know, it's one of the biggest programs, if not the biggest program in the UK. And it has been for many, many years now, when I kind of grew up swimming for the team and then coaching with the team as well. But coaching at a national centre is slightly different. And I suppose I have to thank John Rudd and John Watson for the support I got at the time in 2017, because there was no formal head coach at the time when I arrived and when Beth Carson arrived as well. And so they kind of helped me settle down, find my feet. I suppose you could say I was thrown in at the deep end. But again, it's, although it was daunting, you never really had time to think about anything like that, which was for the better, I suppose.
What was the hardest part of the transition, or the biggest challenge maybe that you faced?
I wouldn't say it was anything to do with the coaching side, because like I said, I had that support around me. You know, John Rudd being a multiple medalist coach, John Watson again being a multiple medalist coach, and having that experience around me, it was more so kind of upping and leaving, because my partner at the time, she was still in Plymouth. We were selling our house. So we were completely moving our lives from Plymouth, where we had both grew up at the time, to obviously a different country. And, you know, although, you know, the cultures are very, very similar and we all speak the same language, it was difficult at the time, but I look back and, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world.
In relative terms, you haven't been coaching for a very long time, mm-hmm. Compared to the amount of time you were swimming. So how do you ensure that your athletes buy into you and the philosophy in the centre?
This is something I've learned from Ben since his arrival in kind of August, September 2017. And he's taught me, one, you have to be consistent. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be consistent in terms of, you know, being an 8 or 9 out of 10 one day and then a 3 or 4 out of 10 the next. It's just a daily 7 out of 10, making sure that you're consistent with your messages, consistent with your behaviors, consistent with your attitudes towards the athletes, but also making sure that you've done your research and you have conviction in your own ability and in what you say at the time, because there's a fine line between arrogance and confidence. And that's something that Ben has really brought out in me. I would say I'm not naturally the most confident person in the world, so I have to thank him for that, which is really good. But Ben and I work so closely together, and obviously he's not just the the national centre head coach. He's also the head coach of the nation as well. So I get checked and challenged on a daily basis, which, you know, can only help me.
Stephen, how important is it that you have belief in your own coaching ability as well to be able to deliver those messages and those training plans to your athletes with confidence and conviction?
Yeah, that's really important because, like I said before, if you don't believe in yourself and believe in the plan and the philosophy, then there's no way the athletes are going to buy into it, especially at senior level, because at senior level, sometimes they're more experienced than the actual coach itself. Luckily, kind of we've gone on that journey together. There's only Shane Ryan, who's obviously been the Olympian beforehand. But the likes of, you know, Dara Green and Brendan Hyland and Neve Coyne, they've all kind of gone on that journey with us, which is really handy. So I suppose it's been a little bit easier in that sense. But again, you have to have conviction as to why you're delivering that message. And even if it's maybe slightly wrong or it's going down the wrong path, as long as you have a reason why, then it's not necessarily the wrong answer because you believed it was right at that time.
That's fair enough, I guess. We know that the Olympic trials are coming up. The mm-hmm. first question I have for you with regards to that is, how is training going? And is there anything specific that you're working on at the moment?
Training's been going really well. Since the pandemic hit, our daily training environment has improved massively. During the first lockdown, we had the initial 10 weeks off where kind of the whole country was shut down. And that was a little bit of a shock to the system, but you have to give credit to Paul Tolte and the rest of the coaching team for kind of stepping up and making sure that the athletes kind of got what they needed in terms of from a physical point of view on the Zoom classes. They were absolutely fantastic. And credit goes to, you know, the rest of the coaching team, but also to the athletes as well for putting in the effort there. It's hard enough coming in, trying to do what you need to do in a facility that's absolutely fantastic, but trying to do it in your back garden or in your living room is a little bit different. But going back to the point where our environment has improved, the athletes have a lane to themselves at the moment, which is kind of second to none, which is absolutely fantastic. We almost have the facility to ourselves as well. Obviously, we share it with diving and power as well. So I suppose you can say that's the silver lining in this COVID cloud. And yeah, we got the trials are on the horizon and we're going into a preparation phase now as we have about 3 weeks left. And traditionally this would be called a taper. However, with the model that we use, these final few weeks are where we kind of really put the icing on top of the cake and just make sure that each individual is prepared based on their own personal.
So how do you tailor their training sessions now to make sure that everybody has a bespoke training plan as opposed to one size fits all?
It's based on the model that we use. It's called the Jan Albrecht model. And he's our and the physiologist that we use. He's a physiologist to multiple different nations and multiple different coaches. And the model itself promotes that individualization, making sure that each athlete gets exactly what they need based on their own physiology.
So does he do specific testing like VO2 max or lactate testing or blood testing, or what does he do?
Yeah, we do the testing every kind of 8 to 10 or 12 weeks. The week is planned via our yearly overview, and we kind of plan in where we're going to test based on what competitions we have that year and kind of what we're trying to achieve. Once we receive the test results from Jan that the swimmer's complete, we then go about planning kind of the next phase in terms of the next mesocycle. But again, this is all down to their individual physiology. The process that we would go through is that Ben and I would sit down, discuss the test results that we receive from Jan, put it into the yearly overview in terms of the session type, the volume, and also the land work that they're gonna be doing. And once this is done, Ben would then arrange a meeting with Jan himself over Zoom or Skype. And he would then check and challenge us based on what we've put into the plan to see whether we're actually putting in the correct things.
So how do you plan a training week?
The training week is like I said, it's planned based on their own physiology, and it's planned via the yearly overview. So there's multiple layers to the planning. We have the yearly overview, you then have your weekly training plan, and then you have your session content for that week. The plan goes out each week on a WhatsApp group that we have for the athletes and the coaches. the session content itself is wrote on a daily basis. And the only reason why we do that, or the main reason why we do that, is purely because we see the athletes on that daily basis. We can then judge and make sure that we're actually, what we're giving them is relevant. You know, we don't want to push the athletes too hard if we're then seeing that they're actually quite tired at that time. It's kind of a multiple layer of planning, which makes complete sense.
And how important is the relationship between the swimmer and the coach to determine how you tweak or adapt those sessions?
It's really important because, you know, a coach can dictate what the athlete does, but the athlete has to trust that coach 110% and make sure that what the coach has given them is absolutely relevant to what they need and what they're doing at that point in time. So again, going back to a previous question that you spoke about, it's making sure that the messages are consistent, not just from Ben, but also from myself and the rest of the coaching team. So we make sure we close the loop, making sure that we always stay in contact. And if, for example, Ben said something to Dara Green about his stroke, he would then make sure that the rest of the coaches know, so that we're not in conflict with each other. So we all deliver the exact same message every single time.
How do you manage that communication between the coaches? Because it's almost like there's so many of you working on the one athlete. How do you make sure those messages are consistent? I'm sure it would be similar in other coaching practices around the country for other clubs and for other high performance athletes as well.
We just make sure we have clear lines of communication. So if, for the coaches that are on deck, if you've just said something to an athlete that maybe where you've seen something in the water and you've tried to change something, you then just have that quick conversation with the coach saying that, you know, I'm just said to said athlete that we've worked on this. What do you think? And then again, you get check and challenge, which is really good. But WhatsApp helps so much. We have a coach's WhatsApp where we make sure that obviously the coach's welfare is top priority, but also those lines of communication in terms of what's been said to each individual athlete is said to the whole coaching staff. And we also have a kind of a roundtable meeting every Friday morning with the practitioners over at the Institute as well. So it's not just the coaching staff, it's also the SSSM, which is absolutely fantastic to have that support as well.
And how do you balance your time between curating and creating training plans and deck time?
The time itself in terms of the planning really helps. So that this model really promotes creativity, I think. Because you do so many layers of planning, all of a sudden everything is almost done for you, if that makes sense, because of how much planning is done prior to the sessions actually being delivered. So when you turn up to training, you make sure we have the conversation with the head coach or the coaches that are on deck, and we make sure that we rewrite the relevant sessions. And it all just makes so much sense, the fact that we have the multiple layers of planning, because it just makes it so much easier.
And I guess the saying comes to mind, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So when you have all your planning and preparation in place, you can actually implement it in the water.
Exactly.
But talk to me a little bit about the on-land stuff that you're doing, because, you know, for a long time here, we've had no pool access as age group athletes. I know the senior athletes and elites would have had pool access. But talk to me about strength and conditioning and how that helps adaptation for swimming, stroke, technique and performance in the water.
It's a little bit different to kind of what an athlete on land would traditionally do, because obviously everything they do is weight bearing, but everything that we do is unweight bearing, if that's a phrase, because obviously you're in the water and you're buoyant in the water. So there is that fine line between how much strength you can gain in the gym and how much outcome or how much positivity you can then create in the water. Because being a swimmer and being an athlete, it's not just about how strong you are or how fast you are. It's about that feel for the water and that connection with the water. It's why we spend so long in pre-season coming back after having 2 weeks out, because we need to make sure that the athletes have that feel for the water again before we start ramping up the volume and everything like that.
So how do we get that feel for the water? My swim coach is always saying to me, you know, you've got to feel the water. And I know we spoke to somebody recently, I can't remember which one of the coaches it was, and he was telling me about doing handstands in the water, that they do them for fun because it helps with the feel of the water. So as an age group athlete or age group swimmer, we're always being told feel for the water. So how do we get that?
For me, it would be about your body position, your balance in the water, and also sculling. Sculling is something that we use quite a lot, and we also use tethers as well. And tethers are like a resisted bungee rope that we can either hold or tie onto to an object to give that swimmer resistance. And it creates that feel for the water. And what I mean by the feel for the water is that connection between mind, body, and substance, because what we need to ensure is that the athletes don't just ramp up the volume too soon and neglect any form of technical aspect or body line or body position in the water, because ultimately we are in a technique limited sport. So we do need to ensure that those athletes feel the water and have that connection with the water, and they need to explore in those first few weeks in terms of their body position, their hand position, their catch position.
So when we get back into the water, what should we be focusing on? Should we be focusing on slowing down and practicing our technique, or trying to do max efforts in the pool when they open once again so that we can get faster after a lot of us being out of the pool for so long?
Definitely the first one, slowing down, making sure we're working on our distance per stroke, making sure we're working on our body position, our kicking ability, our kicking technique, our sculling ability, our sculling technique, our pulling ability, pulling technique. It's not just for the age group athletes as well. It's also for the seniors. It's something that's always evolving, and something that as a swimmer, you always need and always can improve on. I would say in terms of the age group athletes, they should always be working on distance per stroke, and should always be working on trying to improve. Because obviously when you get to that senior age and that senior level, especially international level, things become a little bit more refined. You may be just tweaking here and there. Well, as the age group athletes have so much to work on, if you start ramping up the volume and working on, for example, VO2 max, then you neglect that side and you create that lower ceiling.
And how do we, or how do you, create fun for some of your senior athletes? Because it's quite a high pressurized environment to be putting all your focus into getting to the Olympics or a world championships or whatever that key one race or two race or three races are for a season, or maybe for a lifetime. But how do you keep them energized and motivated towards that goal outside of maybe the pool or the strength and conditioning? You know, how do we bring the fun to keep them engaged?
I suppose the fun comes from the love of the sport to begin with, in terms of I would hope that they're not doing it purely for the external reasons. They do it because they actually enjoy swimming and they like swimming. Because we all know it's just a slippery slope if you're doing it for all those external reasons. You gotta actually enjoy what you do and have that love for the sport. I would say some of it comes from the likes of the coaching staff. It would be the different personalities coming together, making sure that, you know, the athletes are first of all okay from a personal side, and then making sure that we add in competition. And I know that sounds silly, and it might think, oh, why are you trying to compete in training as well? But for some reason, these senior athletes love to compete. So if we're doing, say, a warm up, then we have the main set and swim down. As part of the end of the warm up, we would maybe do sprints and pair them up, and they go absolutely crazy for any form of competition, whether that be kind of underwater speed or rotation speed on turns, or just, you know, flat up racing each other. They absolutely love it.
Having come through a high performance program yourself and gotten to such a high level as a swimmer before retiring, looking at younger athletes now coming through the programs we have at Swim Ireland, what do you think parents and coaches can do locally to support those athletes on their sporting journey, especially when it comes to keeping them in sport?
It's a difficult question, because if I look back at when I was, say, 12 to 16, you have, or you would expect and would hopefully want, the support from your parents. But at the same time, you didn't necessarily want your parents there. So you wanted their support, but you didn't want them always there. And I think that's just, part of growing up and almost being embarrassed by your parents. But the parents just need to make sure that they are there for their children first and foremost, making sure that, you know, they continue to enjoy what they do. They're diligent with what they do. But from a coaching perspective, in terms of, you know, when the clubs come back after what has been over a year now, the coaches also need to ensure that the athletes are okay from that personal perspective, because it's going to be so so difficult and so sad. I think we're going to have almost a lost generation at the moment, because it's been such a long time since these clubs have been back in the water. You can really see kind of the 14, 15, 16 year olds who were on the cusp of maybe retiring anyway because there were other sports or other external activities. I think it could be quite damaging. So we need to ensure that the fun and the love for the sport is kind of put back in first.
And it is quite a demanding sport when you think about the level of commitment that young children really, and as they grow up with swimming. There's a huge commitment put for parents and for those young athletes, even to reach a certain level before they retire. They may never even make it to senior level, but the whole way up, it's a massive commitment really, isn't it?
It really is. And it's something that as an athlete back in my day, I never appreciated how much my parents actually did for me, running me to and fro from school to training, making sure my meals were prepped. You know, when I was younger, I would train from 5:30 till 8 in the morning, school from 9 till 3, and then train 5 till 9 in the evening. And it's relentless. And it's something that you don't really as a 15, 16 year old appreciate at the time. You just think, well, come on, mum and dad, help me, take me training, do this, do that. But it's something that I think athletes really do need to appreciate how much their parents, not just from a time perspective, but also from a financial perspective as well.
And as you look back over your career coming through your swimming and your competition and trying to balance your swimming life with your school life, with your teenage life and life generally, what advice would you give to any of our young swimmers coming through now, having gone through that process a number of years ago?
I would say you don't need to be worried about your teenage life or your teenage years, maybe, you know, not being what your friends who are, you know, kind of the average though. And that's no disrespect to people that aren't athletes. That's just saying people that swim and people that do other different sports are wired slightly differently, if that makes sense. I wasn't the one to, you know, really go out with my mates because my friends were at swimming, even though I had friends at school that were normal, if we want to call them normal.
We call them our other friends.
Yeah.
We say the other friends.
Yeah, the other friends. I would say that your family and your friends were at swimming as well. So if you're going on training camps or if you're training, you know, 20 hours a week, you're spending that with your friends at the same time. So you're not losing any years. You're actually gaining experience, especially with, you know, multiple international competitions that you can go to and experience as well. No, I would say you have to put everything into perspective and think about how lucky you are. Rather than worrying about what all your other friends are doing, I'm sure they're worrying about what you're doing as well.
I'm sure they are. And one of the other questions I have for you is, how do you get the balance? How do you get the balance right between your swimming and your study and your school life at those ages?
I had a really good relationship with my school at the time. They helped me tremendously throughout my kind of early years, if that makes sense. Throughout my GCSEs and A-levels, they would afford me time to go on these training camps or to train at the hours that suited around performance, rather than kind of getting up at 4:30 in the morning to then train and then go to school, because they understood the impact of me being up at 4:30 would then have the impact on me being at school as well. So they afforded me the opportunity to only take 3 A-levels rather than 4, and also only take, I think it was 8 subjects at GCSE rather than the 11. Which was absolutely fantastic. And I don't think I would be where I am today without that help. I don't think it hindered me. I think it helped me a lot.
As a swimmer, what motivated you to train hard?
I would say pre-2004, it was trying to become county champion. You kind of work your way up as an athlete when you're young. You see all the kind of the regulars who win your events, and you just aim to, oh, I wonder if one day I'll beat them. But then those goals and those challenges have to change, because if you get to that point and then you start beating them, you have to be able to evolve. Post 2004, sorry, it was to become an Olympian. But I suppose I never had in the back of my mind whether I could win the Olympics or not. And I wish I'd maybe set my sights higher, so that if I had fallen short, I maybe would have made the Olympics rather than just saying I want to be an Olympian and then just fall short.
Interesting, because the follow-up question I have for you is, as a coach now, what motivates you to get the most from your athletes?
It's a difficult one because we do put the person first. And I suppose from my perspective, I want to make sure that, like I've said before, that they enjoy what they do. What motivates me in terms of my daily kind of coaching environment and the racing environment is to see our athletes, the ones that are in our daily care, do a lifetime best when it counts. And that's all we can ask for. You're always striving for success, but success is, comes in many different forms. If that's someone just getting a PB by 0.01 of a second, then happy days because we've done our job. And if that means Olympic qualification, if it doesn't mean Olympic qualification, if it means semi-final at the Olympics, if it means a medal at the Olympics, then so be it. But it's trying to get the best performance we can out of those athletes when it's needed.
I've only a couple more questions for you. The first of those is your top tip for working with senior athletes.
Okay. I would say when working with the age group athletes, they tend to hold on to everything you say and they believe in everything you say. However, when you're working with the seniors, you have to accept and expect them to challenge you. So I'd say you better have your facts straight and have reasons as to why you're doing whatever it might be. So I'd say facts, facts, facts.
And your favourite swimming moment?
It would be representing the Irish swim team at the World Championships in 2019. Obviously before all COVID kicked off. Thank God we were able to do that before this. It was amazing to be able to help and support the Irish athletes at that time, but also kind of a great experience and something I'll never forget. And hopefully when all this is over, there'll be more opportunities for me to gain that experience as well.
And if we have any coaches listening in or any younger swimmers maybe who are looking to go into coaching after their swimming career finishes, what advice would you give them?
Always ask questions. Never be afraid to ask questions. There's never a silly question. There can only ever be a silly reply or a silly answer. So always ask questions, even if you may feel silly at the time. No question's ever silly. So please just ask away.
And my final question for you is, coming from your own journey in sport and the disappointment you had to deal with missing out with the Olympics, how do you support your athletes when they get disappointed with their performance? Or how do you encourage them to maybe get back out on the pool deck for the next event and put a disappointing performance behind them? Do you pull from your own experience to support those athletes?
I suppose I do, in a way, making sure that whoever it might be has space and time to think. Rather than being irrational, they need to be rational. And in order for them to be rational at that point in time, we need to give the athlete or said athlete some breathing space, if that makes sense. So it's not necessarily talking to them straight after the race. It may not even be talking to them after they've swam down. It may be in the next few days, because then they can actually come to you with the questions and then you can actually give the answers, rather than it maybe escalating into an argument. And that's something we never want. So it's having that time and that breathing space for them to reflect, but also for the coaching staff to reflect as well. Did we do a good enough job by them? Did what we prescribe work for them? And if it did work for them and they didn't execute, then it's down to them. If it didn't work for them, but they tried to execute, then obviously it's down to us. So it's kind of goes full circle.
And I'm going to ask you one more question now, because I'm sure you'll be well able to answer this. How do you deal with pressure? Standing on the starting blocks, the gun's about to go, and just the arena is going wild, or maybe it isn't, maybe there's silence, you're standing there, the butterflies in the tummy, this is the biggest day of your life. How do you deal with the pressure?
That'll be different for multiple different athletes. But one thing that we say to the athletes under National Centre Dublin, when they go to kind of the big arena, is to make sure that they take everything in when they go there. When they come out of the core room and the crowd are screaming, make sure you look up, acknowledge that, acknowledge what is going on, acknowledge who is around, and acknowledge what you're about to do as well. Because if they're in that situation, then they've definitely put in the hard work anyway. It can be a bit of a lonely place behind those blocks sometimes. So if you take everything in, it may give you that extra 5%, which is what you need to either qualify for a semi-final or final or maybe even a medal.
I love it. And I love the piece you said there, that if you're already standing on the blocks, you've worked hard to get there already. It's a great perspective and mindset to have. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. Best of luck over the coming weeks. And thanks to everyone for tuning in. Be sure to follow all the action across the Swim Ireland social platforms at Swim Ireland, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Until next time. And in the meantime, stay safe and thanks for tuning in.